KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
La Playa.
I live in the Transmission.
Haight Ashbury.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, how many Bay Area place names have you been mispronouncing?
Excuse me, sir. How do we pronounce the name? We need to officially decide how we should pronounce the name.
We'll explore the San Francisco neighborhood's name, Portola, and the neighborhood itself.
It feels kind of like a small, like weird family here. That's why I keep coming back.
From a bookstore turned playing card battleground to a reading group for people with special needs.
And the teachers were just, they were so excited they were filming it. They were just like, this is a breakthrough.
Three stories all about KALW's home neighborhood. On this Valentine's Day, our love letter goes out to you, Portola, today on Cross Currents. If you watched professional baseball this past season, you may have noticed something new on the back of players' jerseys. The tilde, or the tiny squiggle over the N in Nunez, or the accent grave, that slanting line over the A in Gonzalez. The campaign, called Ponle Acento, is Spanish for put the accent in it, and it reminds teams to ask their players how they want their names written. When it comes to accent marks, Major League Baseball is ahead of the curve. California was born from Spanish origins, but it does not allow accent marks on official identification documents. Likewise, none of the names of our Bay Area neighborhoods and street signs have accent marks. That means pronunciation can be a bit of a mystery. KALW's Carrie Spivak went to properly sound out the particularly mysterious name of one of San Francisco's neighborhoods.
You've just given birth to the most perfect little human. You name him after your father and his father before him. On the birth certificate, you spell it just like it's always been spelled, with an accent mark over the I. Then Giselle Sanchez comes along.
I see the accent mark, and the first thing I do is tell them, you know, everything looks good except the accent mark, and I'm really sorry I can't use that.
Sanchez is a birth recorder at St. Luke's California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. She helps parents with their babies' birth certificates. But not every name will do. California has rules. Accent marks are not allowed.
Last name Hernandez, and there's a little accent mark, which unfortunately we couldn't use. We've got another couple here from Russia. They wanted to name their baby Eneas, and I pronounce Eneas simply because the accent mark is there. But unfortunately, I can't use that either.
This affects a lot of Spanish names, as well as German, French, Estonian, Polish, Russian, Turkish, and more. Something like an accent mark might seem like a small detail, but it tells you how to say a name right. And Sanchez says, for some parents, it represents something more important.
It's removing their culture, who they are. My son's name is Julian, not Julian.
Accent marks are missing all over the Bay Area. Many neighborhoods and streets are named after Spanish explorers. Some of those names once had accent marks, but now, without them, we don't know if we're saying them right. Listen to the different ways these residents pronounce the name of their neighborhood in San Francisco.
The Portola.
I call it Portola District.
The Portola.
Portola.
The Portola District.
This name once had an accent mark. When it disappeared, the original pronunciation went with it.
The people in the 1920s that came to this neighborhood pronounced it Portola.
That's Raina Garibaldi, a San Francisco native born and raised here. You know the Slim history book with the old photo on the cover that you see in a lot of neighborhoods? She wrote it. According to the book, immigrants from Italy and Malta and Jews from Europe settled here in the 1920s. Their pronunciation,
Portola,
caught on. But that pronunciation is now fading away.
Now people that come here new from other parts of the city or other countries say Portola.
Garibaldi is talking about people like me. I say Portola. That's how I've always heard it pronounced. But after talking to Garibaldi, I started to wonder about Portola and how it should really be pronounced. To find out, we need to look into our California history. Don Gaspar de Portola was a Spanish explorer. Historians believe he discovered the San Francisco Bay in the 1700s. He was also the first governor of Spanish-ruled California before it was a state. After the miners struck gold and San Francisco rapidly grew, most people living here didn't know about Portola, and those that did forgot about him.
This piece of California history was a little bit obscure in the back pages of the history book, so to speak.
That's John Freeman, a local historian. He says that in 1909, San Francisco quickly rebuilt itself after the big earthquake and fires. It wanted to throw a five-day carnival to relaunch the city as a destination for business and tourism.
They were searching around for a theme, a set of colors, and something to hang their festival on.
They settled on the 140th anniversary of Portola's discovery of the San Francisco Bay and called it the Portola Festival. Suddenly, San Francisco was enamored with Portola. In postcards advertising the event, he looked rugged, with wavy hair spilling out from under a plumed hat, a sash over his shoulder, and a long sword by his side. But as talk of the festival spread, a vexing question emerged. According to Freeman, the chair of the festival committee was giving a speech when he pronounced Portola three different ways.
One of the principals of this particular meeting says, "Excuse me, sir, how do we pronounce the name? We need to officially decide how we should pronounce the name."
The organizers began an extensive search for Portola's signature. Dispatches were sent to Spain and Mexico. They wanted to know if and where he put the accent mark in his name so they could pronounce it right. In the meantime, how to say Portola went viral in a 1909 way. Letters poured into the San Francisco Call. One of them suggested that the pronunciation be decided by a game of dice. Another newspaper joked it should be porthole. And then there was the verse, like this poem called Lost Accent, published in the Chronicle.
"For my nerves were racked to pieces, and I felt an awful jar when I heard the mispronouncer say my name was Portola."
Only days before the festival was to officially open, a Stanford academic discovered a cache of Portola's letters in Mexico City. He said,
"I have looked at the documents. He had an accent at the end of his name, so the name should be pronounced Portola."
Finally, how he would have pronounced it, with the accent and stress on the A. The long-lost accent, Portola. But just as quickly as it was discovered, it was gone. Newspapers couldn't print the accent mark.
Having a font with an A accented was a rarity in anybody's print box.
Today, in the Bay Area, there's no accent mark on any of the signs that bear his name. Not on neighborhoods, streets, schools, or even the city named after him, Portola Valley.
Encarnacion, accent mark. Jesus, accent mark. Colon, Lucia.
Like Giselle Sanchez has seen, there still aren't any accent marks on Californian names.
Hector.
Today's young explorers can speak their names into voice recorders. But unlike Portola, they will never have official papers to show where their accent marks should be. So, if we can learn anything from Portola, it's to put your accent mark wherever you can. You just don't know if you'll wind up in the history books. In San Francisco, I'm Carrie Spivak for Cross Currents.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me Her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name.
Carrie Spivak is a reporter training with KALW's Audio Academy.
Up against the wall, keep up falling, these heels that keep me.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. So there's a long and storied history behind the dueling pronunciations of the name Portola. The neighborhood is also home to another kind of dueling. It all goes down in a tiny brick bookshop under a red awning with Chinese characters painted in white. KLW's Jeremy Ju takes us inside.
It's Sunday, 12 noon, and I'm standing in the middle of a battlefield.
Wait, we almost have a full house today?
Surrounding me are a kindergarten teacher, a photo tech, an aspiring music producer, and a handful of students from City College and nearby high schools. Today, though, they're all warriors, ready to challenge one another in their favorite trading card games.
Okay, let's start round one now!
Today's epic adventure is happening in a small shop in San Francisco's Portola District. Winners, books, and gifts.
Stand up, my Vanguard. Ancient Dragon, Baby Bird, draw.
The games they are playing here came out of Japanese anime television series.
And the battles of Kawanakajima reach their bloody climax!
In the shows, the animated characters gain powers from trading cards.
With countless people around the world playing trading card games,
marketers realized they could make money selling decks of these cards to fans, and trading card games took off.
They've quickly become a part of our daily lives.
The games combine the collectability of sports cards, the gamesmanship of poker, and the strategy of chess.
If I 6 or more, I draw a card. If there's 10 or more, I get to unflip one.
Ray Vu, a high school junior and foreign exchange student from Vietnam, stands hunched over his cards.
This is a scary deck.
He faces off against his buddy Brian Zhang, a student at City College. Their backpacks lay at their feet like discarded shields. Brian flips over a card of an anamorphic clock and calls out his move.
TikTok worker moves into soul, superior call grade 1.
He pulls out a card of a dragon with wheels for legs.
Let's see, steam breath attacks for 14 to Yasui.
And inflicts some serious damage.
Corner jet attacks for 11, Vanguard.
Winning the match.
The match ends.
The player wins, Gear Chronicle Brian.
But there's no hard feelings between the two friends. And besides, there's always the next round.
Okay, round two now.
Right now, there are about a dozen players competing. 15-year-old Jeremiah Cervanya is here with his mom, Aurene.
Basically, I'm like a soccer mom, but instead of driving them to soccer, I drive them to card games.
What Aurene fails to mention is that she's not just a chauffeur. She's also a player, and she's been playing since before her son was born.
I was pregnant with him. Had nothing else to do but watch TV, right? So when I turned on TV, like, you know, all these anime shows come in, and then that got me interested into the Yu-Gi-Oh! Game.
After watching, the natural transition was playing, and once she started, she was hooked. She started dueling her husband for chores.
But, you know, if you need to do the dishes, I would say, like, duel me for it. So, I mean, that's how we, we basically did our chores back then.
So real quick, how do trading card games work? Well, first, you have to collect the cards to build a deck. You use that deck to duel other players.
Do you cut the deck?
And then, because new cards are always being released, you constantly need to buy more cards to stay competitive. These games are moneymakers.
When we first opened up, we used to be a bookstore. We had English storybooks, Chinese storybooks. We also had a whole section dedicated to manga. And business was okay.
That's Hector Liu. His mom, Sheila, owns the shop. Hector's 22 now, but when Winners first opened, he was 13 and a regular player.
After school, we would always have like a small crowd of like students from all around just coming together and just playing games. They actually sat on the floor or on the bookshelf itself. And I think that's when my mom kind of realized that it's a good way to just not only expand business, but appeal to everyone around here.
His mom brought in tables and started hosting weekly tournaments where players can compete and also share their knowledge.
All right, let's proceed to round 3. We have Ryan against Eddie.
set up in the back of the room, Eddie Gonzalez reminds me of The Godfather. He's been playing these games for 19 years.
Exactly. So you can still guard past that. This, you have to guard twice.
Right now, he's helping out Ray Vu. Remember him? He's the Vietnamese exchange student. He's newer to the game.
If you play Zangeki, do you really try to, you know, rush your opponent?
No, it just depends on who you're going against.
Even though they might compete later, Eddie's sharing strategies and giving Ray pointers.
Probably the better way was to go on this and then later on switch over.
And that's the real magic, and perhaps the biggest selling point, the community that these games create.
I was new to the game, new to the community, I wasn't sure what I was doing, but as I started coming more and more, I realized I really like playing this game, as I also really like playing the game with other people.
Eric Kura, a 19-year-old aspiring music producer, has been playing trading card games since he was 8.
So I kept coming here every week and playing, and as I kept doing that, I met more people, made more friends, and you know, between the inclusiveness of this community and like how it feels, it's kind of like a small, like weird family here. That's why I keep coming back, and that's why the community I think here is actually pretty special.
And that's something I think I can get into, a reason to start playing and keep coming back.
Can I get a starter deck for card fight, please?
Is the one?
Yep, that's
okay.
It.
All right.
With cards in hand and ready to duel, this is Jeremy Ju for Cross Currents.
Jeremy Ju is a reporter training with KALW's Audio Academy. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Just a few blocks west of Winners Books and Gifts is the Portola Branch Library. They've partnered up with Burton High School, just up the hill nearby, to host a book club for developmentally disabled adolescents.
This is a place that every walk of life is welcome, every ability, every race, no matter who, every age, it doesn't matter, and it's all free.
Now the group meets regularly with one mission, to enhance the love of reading. KALW's Bowen Wang brings us that story.
Let's go on a field trip.
Are we going to the library today?
Yes.
All right. We're going to get on the bus and we're going to read...
Read...
Books.
Books, yes.
Billy Ibrahim and his teacher are taking the bus from the Burton High School Library to the Portola Library for a book club.
This is not a class. We're not teaching them anything. It's not learning how to read. It's reading to learn.
That's Nicole Germain, the head librarian at Portola Library and founder of the Next Chapter Book Club. It's a national book club for developmentally disabled adolescents and adults. Nicole's known as the camp counselor of librarians, and she has a special knack for encouraging students to read.
Quiet, right? And kind of, he finally is quiet. That's better, said Hagrid, breathing heavily and sitting back down on the sofa.
Nicole wanted to create a space in the library that had inclusive programming for the intellectually and the developmentally disabled. I asked some students what their favorite part of the club was.
Going to library.
My favorite is train books.
Oh, you love train books.
Train books?
Yeah.
Are you going to suggest to read a train book?
Yes.
You ready, hen?
Maybe he thought he could persuade him. Maybe he just wanted him.
The Next Chapter Book Club now hosts students from Burton High School, where they meet once a week in alternate locations between the school's library and the local one. A huge part of working with developmentally disabled teens is preparing them for integration. So alternating locations helps the students feel comfortable using a community resource even after they graduate.
Excellent reading. You read a lot. Thank you. And there were some hard words in there too. And can anyone tell what just happened? What is going on around here? Who can tell me?
At the high school and the local library, feel that the empowerment is already starting to take shape. Portola librarian Nicole Germain tells me about one of her favorite moments.
The first meeting, there was one student who just did not want to come into the room. And that was fine. The next meeting here, he made it into the room and he sat a little closer to our circle. And then this past Monday was an incredible breakthrough. He and I were doing this dramatic reading, this back and forth reading, and he was so animated and so excited about it. And the teachers were just, they were so excited, they were filming it. And it's like, this is a breakthrough.
For the students, libraries become much more than just places. They become an open invitation to learn, to connect with friends, and ultimately feel more comfortable in their community. For Cross Currents, I'm Bowen Wang.
Feel free to read ahead. And also, and I'll see you back at my library next week. Everyone, Mary, will I see you next? Will Jose be here next week too? Miss Jose.
Bowen Wang is a reporter training with KALW's Audio Academy. And that's it for our show today. The team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Jurgen Klemm, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowlands, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, Claire Stremple, and Beatrice Thomas. The show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liza Veal. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by San Francisco band The Good Bad. They've been playing new grass, bluegrass, as they call it, since 2010. You can see it for yourself Thursday night when The Good Bad play at the Brick and Mortar Music Hall in San Francisco. And we'll leave you with another edition of My Mixtape, where people bring us songs that mean something special to them. Take a listen. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
My name is PJ Johnston. I live in San Francisco. My favorite song is I'd Rather Go Blind by Etta James.
Something told me it was over.
In 1997, I had the amazing experience of being introduced to Etta James. She came to perform here in San Francisco at a party thrown by my then boss, Mayor Willie Brown. When the show was over, Mayor Brown took me backstage to meet Etta and said, "Etta, this white boy is in love with you and is just dying to meet you." And she came up to me and said, "Oh, come here, baby." And she wrapped her arms around me. And at that time, Etta was about 350 pounds. She ended up losing a lot of weight. But Etta James is an incredible American icon, incredible singer. And that song will always stand out as one of the most important songs in my life.
Walk away from me, child.